And welcome to the Senate Revenue Committee. Today, the agenda includes public hearing, possible work session on two bills. The chair needs to go and attend another public hearing this morning for a few moments, so I'm going to turn the gavel over to our very competent vice chair, Senator Beyer. A number of people have signed up to offer testimony on both Senate Bill 260 and 252. I will let the vice chair select the order in which he intends to hear those bills and pass the gavel. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman.
We have. Let me open up. We will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 260 and the first bunch. It looks like we've got a whole bunch together from Multnomah ESD. So we'll start there. We'll let you each introduce yourself for the record here. Welcome to the Capitol.
Thank you. Good morning, Senator Beyer and members of the committee. I'm Jean Holiski, chairman of the Multnomah Education Service District.
Senator Beyer, Ed Schmidt, superintendent of Multnomah Education Service District.
Good morning, Senator. I'm Barbara Jorgensen, Director of Instruction for Multnomah Education Service District.
Let's start.
Let me begin by telling you how much we appreciate this opportunity to discuss with you the needs of boys and girls in special programs in Multnomah County and how we address them. I'm extremely proud of the work that our agency does for students and schools in Multnomah County. It's gratifying to have our work validated by an outside objective expert. Last year, Dr. Robert Stevens from Edmond, Oklahoma, was brought in to testify to the ESD task force and the coastal superintendents from across the state. In response to a question from the task force looking for other models of regional services that Oregon could consider, he responded without prompt, and I quote, "I regard the Multnomah ESD to be one of the finest regional educational service agency type organizations to be found anywhere across this country. It is on my short list of places to visit when frequently asked by state policymakers and their desires of viewing firsthand an exemplary services unit," end of quote. We think the dismantling of such a quality agency would be bad public policy. When the ESD task force began their study over a year ago, Multnomah ESD made a conscious effort to take the high road on the issue of equity. We had witnessed the 10-year phase-in of K-12 and knew that ESDs could have even greater difficulty than local districts had experienced. We hoped to survive the 4-year compressed phase-in in a holding pattern with minimal loss in our ability to provide essential services to our students with greatest needs. As the figures have become available, it's glaringly apparent that without consideration of students who require high-cost special services, we could lose over $12.2 million overall in general fund revenue. Multnomah ESD supports the equity of educational opportunity. However, equalization does not mean equal dollars, and here with me today to expand on our unique needs are Ed Schmidt and John Hall, the Vice Chair of the Gresham Barlow Board, Barbara Jorgensen, the Director of Instruction at Multnomah ESD, Susan Ritchie, who is the Director of Alternative Programs, and Bernie Giusto, the Chief of Police of Gresham.
Yeah. Thank you, Jean. Senator Beyer, members of the committee, thank you again for having us here this morning. I believe this is your fourth or even fifth hearing on this bill.
Sir, can I get you just to begin for the record?
Ed Schmidt, Superintendent, Multnomah ESD, for the record, SCHMITT. I think it's your fourth or possibly fifth hearing on this bill, and I believe you all know a lot more about ESDs than you ever hoped to. And I guess the bright side of that is you can think about your colleagues who served on the task force on a year-long analysis of ESDs, the countless hours of testimony that they received, and the reams of paper they reviewed when they brought forth their recommendations. The bright side of the prolonged study allowed all of us, I think, to look for thoughtful solutions rather than quick and easy fixes. And I believe Mr. Groner, in his heartfelt testimony on Tuesday, opened the door for us. His observation about the connection between educational programs for at-risk students and its transferred impact on other areas of the state general fund is compelling. The concept is investing in programs targeted at students who have great likelihood of becoming adults involved in high-cost social and mental health services and the correction system. Or put another way, spending some money now over a few years of a student's life versus spending a lot of money for the rest of his or her life just makes economic sense. It's not just Multnomah County that has so many of these high-need students. Marion County and Lane County and Washington County and others also have kids in need of high-cost services. We strongly support the notion that they be adequately funded to serve them. We don't believe any of you or your colleagues really think that the solution is to dismantle proven quality programs. We need to work together to find ways of bringing others up without tearing others down. It was the K-12 district where I worked during much of the phase-in of equalization after Measure 5. We were a flat-funded district, and at that time we said flat-funded was like slow death, because each year we lost ground with cost of living adjustments, fixed cost increases, and becoming less and less competitive with other districts who are not flat-funded. Looking at the circumstances surrounding Oregon's ESDs today, flat funding for several of us would be much more manageable than a 30% reduction over 4 years, which to us equals $12.2 million. We have already absorbed costs since 1998. We've been flat funded since that time. We have found ways of making internal reductions. We have cut programs. We've tried to minimize the impact on schools. But the concept of finding a way of retaining a flat-funded status for those of us above the mean is much preferable to the compression model proposed in the four-year phase-in. The holdout you have in front of you called Profiles tells a little bit about some of our high-cost students and the programs that serve them, and Barbara Jorgensen is going to talk with you briefly about those with special education implications, and then Susan Ritchie will talk about those with alternative education.
Superintendent Smith, before we move on, I wonder, could you, from your vantage point, is there a considerable difference in the student population Multnomah County serves versus Clackamas or Marion or Wellington?
Senator Beyer, the definition of considerable is difficult, but I think the information that you saw on Tuesday that quantified students in four different areas of high-cost disabilities put us far and above the other three that I mentioned, the more urban school districts, areas around the state. There are other unquantified costs of an urban school district in an urban area, kinds of challenges that students and schools face in the Portland area. So while it's disproportionate, it's certainly not as disproportionate as the far ranges of the formula would suggest, and that's why we're proposing that any ESD that serves high-cost kids should be funded to support those programs. They should be supported across the state, not in Multnomah County. Barbara?
Good morning, Senator Byers, members of the committee. I'm here to talk to you a little bit about the special education programs and the costs of the students that we have in those. The ESD serves ages 5 to 21 students with severe disabilities, including mental retardation, autism, social, emotional, and behavior deficits, severely limited communication skill students, and students with physical and motor delays. Though in most of the areas of the state, these disabilities are considered low incidence, within Multnomah County, the numbers of students with multiple disabilities, which can cost anywhere from a range of $25,000 to over $100,000, is really on the rise. We at Multnomah ESD are serving approximately 257 students this year within the Functional Living Skills Program that serves students with multiple disabilities, and approximately 105 students in the Social Emotional Skills Program. The information I'm going to provide you will give you a brief description of the kinds of things that we do for service and then also the issues that we're facing. So within the two programs, in the Functional Living Skills Program, we have students needing and requiring medical services and equipment, one-on-one nursing, occupational and physical therapy, psychiatric medications, behavioral plans for assaultive and aggressive behaviors, antisocial behaviors. Most of these students have one-on-one or sometimes five-to-one educational assistance with them at all times. They have communication boards or communication devices that are computerized. We have extensive equipment needs for classroom instruction, feeding issues, seizure control issues within the classroom, hygiene, toileting, diapering issues, and that goes all the way up to age 21 for these students. Also, we have what goes along with that, of course, is the instructional and academic needs of these students and vocational living skills for them because their cognitive skills are so low. Students attend these classes for a full school day, and they must be transported during the day to different kinds of community activities, which is another expense that we incur. Approximately 78% of the students that we serve are classified as multi-disabled, requiring a high level of multiple services, especially for autism and severe mental retardation. All of them have communication needs, and 36% of those students are living in foster, group home, therapeutic homes that have been placed within the county. This is a much higher degree, I think, in our county for foster homes than we have any place across the state.
Excuse me, Barbara, could you give us a sense of what it costs the ESD and combined in school district to serve, on average, these children?
For one student?
Yeah.
The average cost right now is around $30,000 for one student, and that's an average child. If we have students that have more than one-on-one assistant, our highest student at this point is approximately $90,000. And that is a student that has five educational assistants with him because he is so assaultive and aggressive. So he needs to be in a situation where he is alone in a building, basically, and we're providing his educational services there for him. We've had this child for the last 7 years. We've been providing this kind of a service for him.
We have 78 of them that fall into this cost range?
78% of them really fall within the severe disability range, meaning that they have 5 to 7, sometimes up to 12 different kinds of services that we're providing during the school day.
78% or 78 students?
Well, we have a total of 257 students. Of that 257, 78% of them have really severe needs. The other ones are ones that are basically the $30,000 type of student, which is still extremely expensive for districts. Our staff are trained 3 to 4 times a year for crisis prevention, intervention kinds of strategies, behavioral kinds of strategies, bloodborne pathogen, and medical intervention techniques for safety for the students and also for the staff. They require extreme, very specific kinds of detailed staff development that goes along with this, and this is also another high cost for us to make sure that we have highly skilled and trained people that are working with these students at all times. Our staff on a given day are kicked, they're bitten, they're punched, they endure this kind of treatment from kids every day, and yet
we
continue.
We suffer that from the Republicans here. I'm very empathetic to that.
We could help you with your needs.
He deserves it, though.
Even with all of this, our teachers still come back to work, too.
I know. We show up every day, too. I don't know what the deal is. For $1,250 a month, I might add. $1,283.
And I have to say, I think our staff, even though they have to endure these kinds of things every day, along with changing the diapers and toileting the kids, they come back and really care about these kids and love to serve them. And one of the things I think we do well is make sure that we meet the needs of the students at a very high level to make sure that they're making progress. The other program I'd like to talk to you about is the social emotional skills program. These students have extreme emotional behavior needs and require services in a separate facility to meet their educational needs. We have two schools that collectively serve over 105 students who are assaultive, aggressive, psychotic, mentally ill, suicidal, and require extreme monitoring at all times due to the severe behavioral swings that they have during the day. Those behaviors can include acting out, screaming, unpredictable fights, violent acts toward themselves and others, and very limited appropriate social skills to allow them to be educated with other students. Many of these students also come from foster group and therapeutic homes within the county, and some type of counseling and nursing services and psychiatric services are needed for them. Approximately 80% of those 105 students take at least 2 to 6 medications in any given day. So we have to continually make sure that we're monitoring medications at all times for them. Individual behavior plans require intense monitoring from the staff, and we have campus safety monitors to ensure the safety of the students and the staff at all times. If we need to, we move or remove assaultive and aggressive students to timeout areas or lockdown facilities that are within the two buildings that we have. We have police actions and calls for triage to hospital happening on a weekly and sometimes daily basis for these students. This population has more than doubled since 1998, with services costing between $17,000 and $25,000, and those are climbing whenever you have to add an additional one-on-one assistant to be with these students at all times. Since this is an educational setting, we have very limited billing that's allowed by Medicaid for us for students that are eligible. We can only bill for occupational physical therapy kinds of things or evaluation services. We cannot bill for the educational services for these students because this is an educational facility. Throughout the 20 years that this program has been providing service, few of the graduates from this program have ever come back to us. Most of them have all returned to their educational settings within their regular school districts, and the placements that we have and success rate of this program continues to climb. Students are with us in this program for approximately 1 to 2 years, causing a high caseload turnover for our staff, so we're continually bringing kids in this program, making sure that they're getting needs met, and then moving them back to their school districts as quickly as possible. The high staff needs in the areas, again, for staff development are safety issues, crisis prevention. They learn how to do physical interventions. We also do very large amounts of motivational and instructional strategies, reinforcement strategies for positive reinforcement for these students because most of them have failed in every setting that they have been in. These students receive a full educational day of academic instruction from us, and the social-emotional skills that we teach them are embedded in their curriculum. One of the things that we're seeing on the rise in this program is that we are getting a lot of residential day treatment kinds of students that are being either taken out of placements there or removed from placements because of failed placements, and those students are the ones that are coming to us now. We're also getting a lot of students that are on probation and are involved in the juvenile justice system. Many that are extremely having severe mental illness that we're having to deal with, which is a whole new ballgame for us to mix these kinds of populations. In closing, I'd like to say that I think we serve these students extremely well for our school districts. We have highly trained staff. We have very creative programming and are very flexible in meeting the needs of students. We basically are the last stopping point for students in our school districts. When they don't have any place to place a child, they usually look to us to develop a program to do that for them, and we don't turn them down. The cost of educating these students within the districts is beginning to be very burdensome to our districts. Even though we provide a lot of the costs of the students through our resolution programs, we have contracts in excess of over $300,000 for one-on-one educational assistance for these students. And that cost is climbing every time we get another child into to a school district that needs a one-to-one person with them. There's more general education dollars that are going from our school districts every year to provide more special education services for these students. We need to find a way to keep on serving these students. We feel like we have the expertise in Multnomah County to be able to do that. We provide out-of-district placements to a lot of students that are coming in from other counties because of lack of placements. and we continue to do that again because we have the expertise, we have the resources, we work very well with the doctors and others in our communities, and we'll look forward to continue to do that as long as we can make sure that we have funding available to be able to assist the students. Thank you.
Thanks. Questions?
Senator Beyer, members of the committee, the two programs that Barbara talked about are on the holdout. Functional Living Skills was the first one, and the Social Emotional Skills was the second one she described. So these are two of the 14 that are here. Susan Ritchie, Director of Alternative Programs, will talk about some of the other students who don't technically qualify under federal law for special education, but are nonetheless high risk, high needs, and cost. Sue?
Could you give us your name for the tape, please?
Good morning, Senator Beyer and members of the committee. I'm Susan Ritchie, R-I-T-C-H-E-Y, Director of Alternative Education at Multnomah ESD. I realize I have a very short time to tell you about programs that give young people the skills to be self-sufficient and contributing members of our world, that contribute to public safety in a very large way, that reconnect disconnected students, disengaged students, that renew a sense of purpose and hope for kids who are adrift, and that impact young lives in powerful and profound ways. Multnomah ESD assists our local districts in their efforts to meet the diverse and comprehensive needs of all of their students by offering a broad array of alternative school programs. You'll find the programs and services that we provide here: turnaround school for violent young people who bring weapons to school, or kids with drug and alcohol offenses; Donald E. Long School for young people in county custody; Helen's View, one program there for pregnant and parenting students; RISE for dropouts; Alpha for unchallenged and unsuccessful students; and Trellis for youth returning to the community from state custody. Who are the students we serve within alternative education at Multnomah ESD? Although our population varies somewhat from program to program, we in many cases serve the throwaway kids, the failures, the grim statistics, the young people the research tells us will never make it. We serve the kids in jail, on the run, homeless, pregnant, expelled, and violent. Within our teen parent program, 95% of our students were dropouts who'd been out of school an average of 2 years. Over half were on probation or parole. Less than one-third live with a parent or guardian. Nearly 70% moved three or more times during the past 12 months. 60% were gang involved. 82% reported being with a past or current abusive boyfriend. And nearly 70% have been sexually abused as children. The research tells us that 8 of 10 young women who become pregnant never graduate, and 80% of their children grow up in poverty. These are kids who need comprehensive support services in order to stay in school and overcome the many barriers and heartbreaking adversity in their lives. These are young people who cannot walk into Gresham High School and expect to succeed, although Gresham works very hard and provides quality services to students. In many cases, it's not enough for these kids. Although it can be very costly for us to provide a customized program that addresses multiple and very serious needs, it's important to point out that we serve the students at greatest risk of becoming liabilities for all of us. Dropouts with few work skills, welfare-dependent young mothers and their children, angry, assaultive youth, juveniles, and ultimately adults incarcerated at great expense. Young people with no purpose, lacking in responsibility for the community, tolerance, and empathy for others. We target our resources to serve the kids who need us most and the kids our society most needs educated. These are cost-effective investments that we make and ones that will reap positive dividends for us for decades to come. Despite the many barriers to success our students bring with them, our programs get results. Last year, 129 students graduated from Helen's View and Alpha High School, each and every one of them a victory. 98% of Alpha students were employed upon graduation. They exceeded the state average in math problem solving on the statewide assessment. They exceeded the state attendance average, and these are alternative school kids. We trained young women in careers where they will earn 30% more than in traditionally female occupations. We aggressively pursued alternative sources of funding and formed partnerships that expanded opportunities for our students and offset cut costs to our local district. We awarded 36 GEDs at Donald E. Long School last year. We consistently help our students address their anger and violence, substance abuse, gang involvement, poverty and domestic violence. We provide a state-licensed child development center for our young parents. We teach them to be loving parents, even though that is far from their own experience as children. We teach them tolerance and nonviolent ways of resolving disputes. We involve them in service activities that allow them to be community assets instead of liabilities, and that give them a sense of purpose and pride. 100% of Helen's View students are involved in community projects, including Habitat for Humanity and many others. We give them a compelling reason to be at school each and every day, and perhaps most importantly, we give them a renewed sense of hope for the future. In some cases, we give them a future. It is in all of our best interests to continue to fund these programs and services for our local districts, for our community, and certainly for our young people. And I thank you for the opportunity to share information with you this morning.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
I have a comment, Mr. Chair.
I have a comment to Senator Castillo.
Thank you. Well, I think you have a very compelling message as to the services that you are providing and the need to continue to provide them. And I just wanted to compliment you on this. This is really well done. Your opening message here, very inspiring, this is a very helpful reminder to us about all the different challenges that are out there for school districts, not only in Multnomah, but around the state. So thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Question, Senator Muniz, or comment?
Good question. Are you part of the multidisciplinary teams dialogue with respect to sexual abuse, physical abuse issues?
Mm-hmm.
You also said you have a child fatality review in Multnomah County?
Yeah, at the county level we do.
So do you have a sense for whether the suicide rate among teens in this population you're talking about is going up or going down, what that rate might be?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has risen somewhat within Multnomah County over the past 2 years, I believe. I know there are a lot of statistics that I believe we need to do a better job of tracking, and that is one, Senator Muniz. But I do think that programs like Turnaround School, the programs that Barbara explained to you, programs that really give kids a sense of purpose and meaning and see their place in the world.
Sure. Well,
contribute tremendously.
I recognize the value. I guess what I'm wondering, because in this existing budget that we have, the governor's choice was to cut $1.1 million out of the child fatality review mm-hmm. process, which I personally object to vehemently, because teen suicide is extraordinary phenomena in Oregon. It's growing, and there's some aberrations. There's some unknown reasons why that exists. So you say that we need to do more statistical analysis, but who's going to do that?
Mm-hmm.
You do
yes,
that?
I believe we do.
You do the statistical analysis?
We do not.
So who's going to do it?
I think
your comment about throwaway kids, unfortunately, that is the population you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
It's very sad.
And we have many of them in Multnomah County, and it is very sad.
Mr. Chair, Senator Muniz, with us today also is Chief of Police Bruno Giusto from the Gresham Police Department. I think he has some perspective on that issue. And also joining us today is the vice chair of the Gresham Barlow School Board, John Hall. And both taking time out of their work schedules to join us this morning, and I hope we have a chance to hear from them.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and Senators. My name is John Eddie Hall. I'm the Vice Chair of the Gresham Barlow School District Board. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. I have to admit, I come in a bit of a quandary. We in the Gresham Barlow School District, I believe, support strongly the principle of equalization of resources to the students in the state. I believe equal access and equal opportunity to be at the very core of our responsibilities to young people in public education. The Gresham Barlow School District vision is that all students will achieve success. So it is in support of that district vision that I speak to you today. The challenge of the current proposed equalization strategy to our district and the impact that strategy will have on all students and families in the district is a great concern. The MESD is our partner and provides essential services that are critical, providing opportunities for success for a growing segment of our student population, those students with special needs. The MESD also provides services that are essential to our core operations and to our assessment, information management, and reporting efforts. Some of the services we utilize through the MESD include mandated special education services, alternative school placements, health services, including school nurses, testing and assessment services for state benchmark reporting, student information services for attendance and progress reporting, payroll accounting, human resources, data retrieval systems. Our current level of resolution funding through MESD for the Gresham Barlow School District is just less than $4 million. Under the current proposed equalization formula, our expected MESD resources will be reduced by $485,000. That's a 12% reduction in this coming year, and that doesn't take into account the effects, of course, of increasing costs for services and what effect that may have. The four-year projection, as we understand it, for the equalization reduction is expected to be for the Gresham Barlow School District a loss of $1.3 million relative to our current year, which is a 33% reduction in our resolution funding through the MESD. Of the resolution funds that we utilize, two-thirds of those are now expended for special education services. All such services are part of our commitment to students and parents through existing IEPs. Our options in response to reductions are few. We can transfer these costs to our general fund, or we can look to change the model of service for these young people, in effect changing the contract that we have with these students and their parents. To ensure, however, eligibility for federal funds, we must maintain a level of efforts with special education, so we are concerned about our ability to sustain our efforts for all of our students. With the shift of cost to the general fund, we're concerned for our students who are achieving success in supported education programs. We're concerned for our students who with serious challenges who need functional living skill services, if you've heard earlier, and for students who find success in alternative school placements, and for all students in our district who will lose opportunity this year and the 3 years that follow through the effects of this transfer to the general fund. To our general fund, I believe in the materials that you received is a sheet entitled Multnomah Education Services Regression School District Reductions for 2001-2002. This sheet represents simply a strategy for us to reduce the services that we're utilizing through resolution funds to equal amount of $485,000. As we look through this list, I'd point out Alpha High School. Our strategy would be to reduce 19 student placements in Alpha High School. It's just currently this year we have 50 students utilizing Alpha. So as a part of a strategy to reach this $485,000 reduction and looking at trying to make these hard choices amongst the the menu of services that are available to us. This strategy proposed reducing that by 19 kids. A Helen's View Teen program, reducing a student, reducing from currently eight to four students in the turnaround program that you heard about earlier, dropping our participation in a classroom law instructional program, a reduction in transit funds for talented and gifted students, reducing our resolution funding for some of the measurement and school improvement services that that we depend upon for tracking and reporting, strategies to reduce the cost of video library services, a reduction in young people utilizing resolution funding for functional living skills, reducing by essentially six students. Currently, we have 29 students utilizing functional living skills the services. This would be a reduction to 23. As I understand it, we currently are looking for strategies for providing services right now for two young people, perhaps looking who don't have a placement currently, and that doesn't account for the early childhood the kids coming into the system who we haven't identified. A reduction in functional living skills teacher that's currently in our resolution funds, reducing one instructional behavioral specialist at one of our high schools, reduction in transportation reimbursement, which is reducing three students from a current seven to four slots for the social emotional skills services that you heard about, and printing graphic services, which are also an important type of service provided by the Educational Service District. So again, what we see here doesn't represent the menu of services that the important services that MES provides. It's simply when we're faced with needing to find a way to reduce by $485,000 a strategy that we've employed, and you see the real effects to students and services that affect that strategy can have. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Good morning. I'm here to, first of all, let me thank you, Senator Beyer, and members of the committee for allowing me to be here this morning. I was listening to Senator Minnis ask a question, and since we have some common understanding of the issue before us in a career of law enforcement, I've been in Gresham Police for the last 5 years as chief, and before that spent 22 years at the Oregon State Police. So in those 27 years, the one thing I can assure you is the landscape has changed for schools and education as it relates to law enforcement. And we've become, as this week's events will point out to you, the final answer and sometimes the first answer for some of these kids that are troubled. And kids who come to those kind of conclusions, as they have across the country this week, isn't the first sign of trouble. That very seldom is the case, and I'm referring to the incidents in the shootings across the country this week. Kids who commit those kind of acts rarely, if ever, once you take a look at the case histories, and I've looked at many of them over the last several years, we don't hear about it, but in fact, these kids have given every indication of trouble prior to those types of events. But let me discuss specifically our relationship in Multnomah County with the Education Service District, and we do have a unique relationship. But in that changing landscape, in the last 2 or 3 years, because of the Education School District's, the ESD's leadership, we came together as a law enforcement group, meeting with all the superintendents in the district, and sent letters, probably the only Education Service District to take that kind of leadership position, to every parent of every student in every school district in Multnomah County, telling them what the rules were for sending their kids to schools, and this is not what supplies they should bring, but what things they shouldn't bring, and what kind of acts were not going to be accepted in Multnomah County. And the reason that that letter was necessary is because of the issues before you today in terms of the kind of problems we're dealing with in schools in Multnomah County, and I'm sure that across the state, not just in our county. But kids are troubled. And they are troubled to the point at which law enforcement has become the buffer between their well-being and their entrance into the criminal justice system. And that's really not a good answer for all of our kids. we shouldn't be the single point of entry to their the rest of their life. And for many of the for many kids, without the kind of help that the education school district provides, we that's what we will become, the first step to the rest of their life. And that is a poor way for us to treat the kids on the fringe of our society, throwaway kids or not, kids who really have no other answers. And I can tell you, to Senator Minnis's question, we've had three teen suicides in my time in Gresham, and that's been in the last 4.5 years. I'll spare you the details, but the issues are very troubling when you see the kind of families that these kids come from, not only families who are in trouble, but families who are not necessarily in trouble. And you just don't know by looking what kids need help. The programs that ESD provides are very specifically important to law enforcement. Let me just focus on one: it's Turnaround School. Turnaround School is a place, what it means is this is the last chance to stay in the regular education system in Multnomah County. And these are kids, and I've been at the school, I've seen what happens. These are kids that get searched on the way in every day. Their bags, their clothes, they get patted down. These are the kids that just weeks before were going into our regular schools, not getting searched, not getting patted down, and we had no clue what they were bringing in the doors. So that's the real fine line difference between what's happening in regular schools and the services that we have to provide. Now, if those kids don't have Turnaround School, they are going to go into the criminal justice system. There is no other question. And when they're not in those kind of programs during the day, they're on our streets. Senator Minnis knows it. I know it from specific experience over 27 years. They're out burglarizing homes. They're causing injury to others and themselves. And frankly, their lives are being thrown away until we finally get them into an institution, at which point they may or may not be salvageable, and oftentimes they're not salvageable. And I appreciate the bent in the governor's budget for the 06 programs. I understand I'm a big supporter of that. I have a long history of working on bodies such as the Multnomah County Commission on Children and Families, the Human Rights Commission, all kinds of commissions. But the fact of the matter is, the reality for law enforcement is we still have kids that we see every day and the younger and younger ages that need help. I think the frustration for us is and as opposed to what most people believe, is that law enforcement always thinks the best thing is jail, and that's the way we get our we feel productive, is that we take the kids either to juvenile institutions, or when they reach adulthood, we take them to adult facilities. That's not true. We need other options. ESD programs gives us other options to refer kids to. It's been a different world for us in the last several years, and because of issues that we see, drug-affected families especially, the methamphetamine craze in this state, causing more and more kids to be abandoned at earlier ages. And what was very disturbing to me, Dr. Smith sits on our Public Safety Coordinating Council and meets once a month. We have a very effective one in Multnomah County. And what's more disturbing to me than anything that he's reported in the last 3 or 4 months is the number of kids that come to elementary school now mentally ill and with families with no way to help them. That's we continue to lower the bar in law enforcement about where we're putting our resources. I now have city-paid police officers in middle schools as mentoring, not so much enforcement, but trying to redirect kids. There will be a day at which we'll have to turn our attention to the elementary schools about these kind of programs. So I urge support for, in a very tough budget time, I understand, I urge support for the ESD's programs, not only in this district, but across the state. They are really our only option before we take these kids to their final entry into the criminal justice system, which many of them never leave again. So, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chief. Any questions? Okay. Have one more?
I think that's it.
Captain Lasher?
I'm sorry, Dr. Lasher, Superintendent of Rental District, was unable to attend today. Okay. Should have taken his name off the list.
Any final comments, Superintendent Smith?
Well, I think it's hard to follow the last line of Chief Justo. This is, well, I'll try. That's certainly the worst-case scenario, and there's so many stages between what we do and that stage where we're working every day, lots of kids, lots of families, lots of problems, and obviously nobody wants to get to where Bernie's talking about, but it's inevitable if these kinds of things don't happen. These kids, these families, these problems are not unique to Multnomah County. I need to keep stressing that. Washington County, Lane County, Marion County, most of the counties around the state have kids and families with some of these same attributes. We just have many, many more of them because of the nature of an urban area.
Just a comment. I actually think the presentation is very, very good. I mean, I kind of know this because of the work that I do, but it, and it goes to the depth of my argument, in essence, against Senate Bill 260 and the idea of equalization in ESDs at all. I mean, notwithstanding your support for it, I think that it's really about services. It's really about, you know, developing certain innovative products to reach certain targeted audiences that are different throughout the state. Yes, there are similarities, but they're different, and they vary. So when we talk about equalization for the sake of equalization, I don't think that that merits. In fact, I would be willing to say let one of the ESDs sue the state. I don't think that their challenge in court would be upheld, because I think that it is, when a court hears what we hear, they're going to, I think, draw the same conclusions based on services. And services are different. And the justification of just merely providing equal dollars statewide per student is too simplistic, and it's the impacts are too dramatic where those populations are best served. I think one of the things that I heard one of the presenters talk about, 70% of some of these young women in, I think it was Helen's View School or some of these programs, have been sexually abused. Now, that's significant. I don't know if it went across your mindset, stuck with you or not, but one of the things that we know in research, social sciences, to the extent that you can intervene or get into that person's life and begin to try to, you know, move them out of that kind of victimization mentality or feeling and stuff that they have, they can become productive citizens. But if you don't do it, they end up themselves, even with women, becoming sexual abusers themselves. And if you don't intervene with young men, and there are a lot of young boys out there who are also victims of sex abuse, if you don't intervene with those kids, that's some intervention, they're going to be the predators. When you think about the fact that 30% of the existing Oregon State Penitentiary population are sex offenders, 15% of our current prison population are mentally ill. I mean, there's some huge, significant problems. So, I mean, to me, the ESD equalization question is a very, 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 very small issue, and I think it's not supported by the Constitution. It's not required, and I just kind of wish we'd get off this whole subject, kill this bill, and move on.
Mr. Chair, Senator Minnis,
Superintendent,
I know we can't have it all ways, but I think what we're proposing is a combination of the two. We're saying that you don't equalize dollar for dollar as an average across the state because the state is different. Every part of the state, however, has significant challenges that should be funded at a level, and then specialized services for specialized needs should be funded at an adequate level for that to happen. And that's why we're saying that please do improve the funding to those below the mean. The Northwest Regional ESD is underfunded. They cannot do some of the things that we do because they don't have the finances to do that. We don't argue that at all. We're saying let's find the proper balance between providing a level of effective service delivery for all areas of the state and recognize the valid differences of all areas of the state. We also support the rural and remote aspect of funding ESDs there because they have special challenges. And that's why I say it's such a complex issue. But I think it gets at the heart of what I've heard this committee say for three or four hearings now. Equalization is much more complicated than just average dollars per kid. There's equalization of opportunity, there's equalization of services, there's money following the students, and all those other thoughtful ways of providing a safety net for the state.
Well, Superintendent, I appreciate you and all of the members that have come up today and talked to us. You've been the focus. Multnomah County has a lot of discussions over the last 7 or 8 weeks, so it's very good to hear this, and it's very clear that you have a full range of programs that make a lot of sense and are very valuable, and frankly, I'm envious of it. Representing Lane County, we've been going in over the last couple of years to try to get our turnaround school going and some of these other programs, and our choice has been, because we don't have the money in ESD, is to take it out of the other schools. that's been a battle, and it's been a tough choice, is that the school boards and the superintendents and staff and the Lane County schools have made, is to take it out of the classroom to fund these schools so that they could do it. And they haven't done it as well as they would like, in fact, hardly at all. But frankly, our motivation, as the chief was talking about, was the event that happened at Thurston High School in my district a couple of years ago, which really motivated us to try and do more of this, and no one's happy with where they're at. So I think that Senator Minnis was talking about, the issue is that we just don't have enough to deal with some of these severe problems in some cases, and it's too easy to not focus on these kids, and we end up spending the money later on in life, a lot more money. Thank you for coming this morning. I appreciate that.
Senator Beyer, just one final comment. Appreciate your calling us the focus of discussion. I understand that. For a long time, we felt we were kind of a goal, but where the kinds of programs we offered and the services we delivered was where everybody needed to be. And then it started to feel like we were more of the target, because the only way they were going to get there was at our expense. As I say, I don't believe that's wise public policy to build one up at the cost of tearing another down. We need to find a way of building them all up.
I will tell you that at least in the education community and the law enforcement community in Lane County, when the discussions take place, and you probably know this, that you're where the people in my community went to say, how do we do this?
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Next up, let's see.
Looks like Judge Pryor and a team from North Central. We've got Rick Howell, Rob Myers.
I'm going to say 20.
Are the three, are you all together?
There's two of us, I'm sorry. There's just two of us.
Just two of you.
This is the team, the A team.
The A team. Any time you say that, you know it's the truth.
I wish it was. I feel a little bit like a lawnmower following a combine.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee,
excuse me, I'd like to just regress that last comment. For a city girl transplanted to the country, that was pretty good. Done. We're following the combat. Thank you. I didn't mean to interrupt your testimony. I just wanted to savor the moment. Proceed, Rob.
Mr. Chairman, it's all right. I'm used to it. For the record, my name is Rob Myers. We've already talked about what it means to live in the empty quarter, so I'm not going to go into a whole lot of detail about that again. I would like to take just a minute and offer some frame of reference for Judge Pryor's proposal on behalf of the five Frontier Rural ASDs and the seven counties involved. But let me tell you first what it isn't. It isn't a panacea that will provide universal solutions to ESD problems. We have neither the experience nor the expertise to tell you or anyone else how large urban ESD should be run. What we can tell you is how educational services can be most efficaciously distributed to 6,600 students scattered over 30,000 square miles. Now let's talk about what it is. This proposed amendment to Senate Bill 260 properly addresses the relative cost of delivering educational services in frontier rural regions. In Gillum County, we knew how much it cost to provide comparative equity of educational opportunity because we wrote the checks prior to ballot measure 5. So we're not here asking you to do something for us that we haven't already proven we were willing to do for ourselves. But even then, were the opportunities equal to urban schools? Of course not. We still offered only 40 high school courses compared to 200 at the metro schools. We couldn't offer fencing, at least the indoor kind. And we still couldn't afford teachers lured away by higher urban salaries. But that's the way it is. We knew that when we signed on, and we're not here to complain about it. We are here to ask for a fair shake on behalf of our students. They don't need Japanese cooking, and they don't need indoor fencing. But they do need English, reading, math, science, and foreign language. And they deserve the opportunity to participate in co-curricular activities like art,
music, drama, and interscholastic athletics. I'm saying simply that these frontier rural kids deserve a shot at working to be responsible, productive citizens, and in so doing, give Oregon's taxpayers a valid return on their investment. This proposed amendment provides the framework and the funding vehicle to give frontier rural students equitable opportunities for quality education. Not equal, but equitable. Because equity of services, not equal dollars, is the measure of fairness that should be applied to educating Oregon's kids, regardless of where they live. With that, I'll close and turn it over to Judge Pryor. She also submitted some packets, and in those packets is a cover page, an index page, the proposed amendment to Senate Bill 260 itself, a funding table distribution that will delineate the dollar amounts involved, letters and resolutions of support. These letters and resolutions of support were from the hearing that was held by the Senate by the ESD Task Force in Condon, and also subsequent letters and resolutions of support that were sent by citizens and other entities in the county. And the last thing are some federal definitions and some rural health definitions of what frontier rural really is and how it came to, how the designation came to pass. So with that, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator, members of the committee. I have really appreciated the time that I've had here to talk to you. We don't always get this many opportunities to try to talk about what it's like on the other side of the state. Judge MacArthur, Judge Birch, Judge Reynolds, Judge Grasty, Judge Boswell, and Commissioner O'Keefe are all in Washington, D.C. today, the National Association of Counties Week there. So, and Superintendent Lanning from our North Central ESD is fighting another battle today on behalf of the kids in Eastern Oregon, and that's on telecommunications. So Rob and I are once again here. And I believe that we've taken a lead on this because the North Central Education Service District was kind of the focus of the task force report. And I don't want to apologize one bit for that focus. I think it's ended up being a very good thing. And we represent what I call the empty quarter of the state of Oregon. The federal government has, as you'll see in the packet, has undertaken through OMB and Bureau of Census and Mental Health to take a look at what is frontier rural. And I think they're finding that it's more than just distance. It's more than just distance that defines it. There are some basic needs in frontier rural Oregon: transportation, schools, healthcare, communications. If I had to pick the four that are critical, and the four that this state was founded on, when people came across the Oregon Trail, that was the first piece. It was transportation. First thing they did was start to build schools, to build their communities. And then they needed a doctor, or they needed a midwife, or something, some kind of health care. And then communication came along to link those communities along the trail together. Those are the same systems that we need out there right now. In your packet is an amendment that we are proposing. First part of it is to make the five small ESDs that were referred to in the task force report frontier rural ESDs. Second part of our proposal is to flat fund them. And the basis of our recommendation for flat funding, you'll see the table on page 2, is to flat fund them at the 2.50 amount that the North Central ESD is funded at now, and not to fund any of those five at less than 50% of that. And we have just taken a shot at what it might look like. There could be different configurations, but this is the one that we're proposing for your consideration. The basis of our proposal rests on the fact that the North Central ESD has the smallest number of students of the five. And just as it takes a certain amount of gas to drive my car from Condon to Salem, and I can
try to get more miles per gallon by going slower. But even if I go 10 miles an hour and take 12 hours to get here, it's going to take a certain amount of gas to run that car, and I can't argue with that. That's the basis of our premise. That's the premise, that it takes a certain amount of money to open the doors on an ESD and do certain basic things. And for us, it's pre-K, special education, some level of special education, and then the regular core education, and then we too have to deal with some social issues and juvenile delinquency issues, medical issues, at some base level. Certainly not to the level that we've heard in previous testimony here. But I am absolutely not going to apologize for the money that the North Central ESD has received. Absolutely, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to go there. There is a base amount of money, and people can argue about it, but until you have to sit down with a pencil and paper and try to do it, I don't think that we should be ashamed of what we've had and what we've done with that money. And I'm just quickly going to give you an analogy. I have been getting a telephone call because I'm the county CEO. I have been getting a telephone call about mediation. And why doesn't Gillum County have a mediation program? And beating on us to do that. The money we received to do it was $157. I can't put together a mediation program in Gillum County for $157. If Gillum, Sherman, and Wheeler, who all get $157, go together, we can't even combine to do a mediation program. Now, I'm not suggesting to you that the issue here is exactly like that, but it's very close. It's very close. On the outside of this building, as you walk up the steps in front, there's a line that says, benefits justly distributed. It's carved into the side of the building. It doesn't say equally distributed. It says justly distributed. And I don't want any of you to believe for 1 minute that we believe this is what we ought to have. As long as you're going to have a continuing population growth, and as long as you're going to have a continuing concentration of that population in ever larger cities, you're going to need this kind of thing in the urban area. But by the same token, you've got to have some base level of program in the frontier rural part of this state as well. So I am very, very grateful for the hours that you have put in listening to us. And I hope you'll notice that we put colored sheets in your packet because we're maybe rural, but we're not boring. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
The committee has received the packets that you mentioned, and I assume that there's been some amendment framed that would be available for
that. Yes, sir. It's on page one. Proposed amendment.
Labeled proposed amendment.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So we have.
I just wanted to hint at that.
Yeah. If you could just be a little more obvious in your intentions.
Perhaps it should have been on the green page.
Right. As a matter of fact, what we'll do is take this proposed amendment to 260 and ask the staff to do a run analysis on it in comparison with the other amendments. And while the chair's on the topic of amendments, we received the entire suite of amendments that were suggested in the hearing earlier this week. We're going to hold these also, but this is the dash twos that we discussed having prepared as a result of our hearing on 260 earlier in the week. These also will be arrayed with the other amendments. So when we do a run for the whole series of amendments, we'll put them side by side. Any questions for this panel?
Mr. Chairman,
I guess it's
for our staff. As we evaluate all the amendments, can we see how close we're coming to being right when we started?
Absolutely, yeah. And as a matter of fact, I think it was testified on the very first day of Senate, of the hearings on school funding formula. Over time, all adjustments tend to cancel each other. But we'll see. Yes, that's a good point. Any other questions for the panel? Hearing seeing none. Thank you very much for bringing an innovative proposal called the Frontier Rural Education Service.
I think the gas stations in the North Central are very appreciative of this.
Actually, Madam Chairman, you'd get better mileage in that rig if you used both sides of the paper for copying. Such practice. We have additional testimony to be brought forward. I believe we need still to hear from Mr. Howell. Generally, is there any other persons here present that wishes to testify on Senate Bill 260? Mr. Howell, you have the floor.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Farioli and committee members, you have a annual report from South Coast ESD that looks like this, and if you'll turn to the inside cover, you have a copy of the testimony I'm about to give and some supporting materials that I'll review with you. My name is Rick Howell, and I'm superintendent of the South Coast Education Service District. I'm also the superintendent side president of the Oregon Association of Education Service Districts. I'm testifying in support of equity funding for ESDs as provided by Senate Bill 260 and as modified by recommendations you received Tuesday in the paper ESD Funding Considerations. Being president of OA ESD is a little like being the trail boss of a cat herd. Superintendents are an independent group. It's particularly difficult when I have the desire to be one of the cats. However, this herd has approved a platform that supports most of the recommendations of the ESD study committee. This committee met for the better part of a year, taking testimony, doing research, and having active discussion. It began with the premise, assume that ESDs do not exist. Its task included to determine what services are needed by school districts and the Oregon Department of Education that would be most cost efficient when delivered regionally. Who would provide those regional services? How should those service providers be governed, organized, and administered, and how should those regional services be funded? This was obviously a very wise and sage task force. ESDs were determined to be the best method of delivering regional services, and their governance should continue generally as it has, with locally elected board and appointed budget committee members and a licensed superintendent. However, they recognized how ESDs add capacity, delivering at the local level such opportunities as database operations and North Central's Frontier Learning Network, or perhaps the Zone B cohort program that through the partnership with Western Oregon University has brought dozens of new special education teachers to school districts, or the Zone B project, which has a volunteer teachers and powers teaching a college class to students and powers and through VTEL, video telecommunications, to students in Bonanza. Or perhaps they recognize the huge OAESD continuing success of OPEN, which ESDs own, and its related projects in STRUT and Project 10,000, which have placed at least 15,000 computers in Oregon classrooms at minimal cost, and the Open Clearinghouse. Perhaps they realize the capacity ESDs also offer to the Department of Education in assessment, SIM-CAM development, staff training, a role that continues to grow. The task force also developed a formula for funding that was determined after weeks of meetings by a funding subcommittee. The committee determined that the state school fund should be apportioned with 95% going directly to school districts and 5% going to ESDs, and that 90% of those dollars would be used according to the discretion of districts and resolutions, with two-thirds of the districts representing 50% of the students agreeing. We were able to keep that cat herd together on these recommendations, but we had, however, a few claw marks and scratches with some others. OESD did not support forced mergers, but we encouraged a process for voluntary mergers. We supported equity, but had concerns about what that would do to our component schools and to the sparsely populated ESDs. We also had concerns about the funding for high-cost special education students. The support for equity was difficult for many of us, but the problem is blatant and came to the forefront about 4 years ago when the equity compression model was implemented. You have a handout that on the top left corner says ESD equity at the mean level, and at the bottom left-hand corner says page 5. If you look at South Coast ESD, on the far right-hand corner, you'll see a per-pupil funding amount of $321.65. Just below that, number 10, Crook Deschutes ESD, is funded at $52.16. At the very bottom is the average of $230.12. The problem's obvious, and so are the concerns. The presentation brought to you Tuesday by our OAESD subcommittee was our effort to answer some of those concerns. The $1 million floor for the Frontier 5 ESDs is the amount they needed to provide minimum services. Minimum is not adequate. The special education dollars were not to recognize the issue some ESDs face with concentrations of high-cost students. It doesn't come close to meeting the true cost. I'm not certain that we can meet those true costs within the confines of ESD allocations. We're trying to keep with a zero-sum balance and discourage any attempts to move money from our clients in K-12 to fix ESD problems. I say all of this as one of the victims of equity. We've been flat-funded for the past 3 years, and we're about to be compressed starting next year. South Coast ESD serves 10 school districts and 3,277 square miles of Coos County, Curry County, and Western Douglas County. We range from Brookings on the California border to Reedsport School District in Western Douglas County and east to Powers and Myrtle Point. We serve about 13,200 students and about 16,660 ADM-weighted students. Last year, we received about $5.4 million on local and state sources for our programs. The year before that, we received $5.4 million. The year before that, the same amount. Next year, under the formula we recommended Tuesday, we expect to receive about $5 million. The following year, we expect to receive about $4.7 million. In the meantime, we have spent down our reserves and are budgeting down our unappropriated funds to the extent that we might have to borrow to make our cash flow balance. We recognize that our districts need every nickel we can make available for resolution services. Our districts have been devastated with precipitous enrollment drops. If you look at your handout that says student census, you'll notice that in June of 1997, we had 14,496 students in our 10 districts. These are not weighted numbers. Last June, we had 13,209 students. That's a 1,287 student drop. At the rate of $5,300 in funding, that reflects a loss to their total revenue of about $6.8 million. Keep in mind the anticipated funding for South Coast ESD next year is $5 million. You have two other sheets I'd like you to refer to. One is the 96-97 program cost sheet. This is page 7 on the bottom left-hand corner. And the other is the 2001-2002 program cost sheet. It has page 9 on the bottom left-hand corner. You can put them side by side. The purpose of these two is to demonstrate the changes in some programs that resulted from budget restraints. Notice that the percentage of special education in both resolutions and contracts has increased. We're pretty much a special education ESD because that's what our districts say they want us to deliver with the funds that are left. When our toe gets stepped on, our districts cry ouch. We dropped speech as a resolutions program for next year, but our districts have to pick it up themselves or contract back with us. Special ed is a mandate. The final sheet that I'd refer you to is the one that's labeled positions in the left-hand column, and on the bottom left-hand page, it's numbered page 11. These are the cuts that we're making so far for next year's budget due to equity. If you look at the summary of cuts, you'll get the bigger picture. The left column gives you the specifics. The summary of cuts shows about $1.7 million cut in salaries, about $258,000 in our supplies and equipment cuts, for a total of about $1.9 million. Those are services that are no longer available to school districts. They're cut out of the budget. What you're not seeing is some of the cuts that move from resolutions to contracts, because it's still in our budget. For example, with speech at $800,000+, it's still a cut to our districts. And if you were to add that in, you're looking at about $2.8 million worth of cuts that the ESD has had to make on the South Coast. Still, despite all of this, South Coast ESD and our component schools recognize the issue here for other ESDs and school regions across the state. Our districts have been through the pain of equity themselves and now realize that the same is probably inevitable for ESDs. I'm not sure how many cats I'll lose on this trail, but South Coast ESD supports Senate Bill 260 with the funding modifications that we recommended last Tuesday from our subcommittee. We don't like it, but we support it. ESDs offer tremendous capacity to our schools and the Oregon Department of Education. Please do everything that you can to provide ESDs with a sound financial base. Thank you.
Questions for the committee?
No questions. Thank you.
Senator. Is there anyone else here present that wishes to offer testimony on Senate Bill 260? We have one hand up. Apparently not. Okay, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 260 and move to a public hearing on Senate Bill 252. We have several folks that have signed up to testify. Mr. Salinas from Hart, Ms. Montoya.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Miguel Salinas. I'm an advocate. I'm not a paid lobbyist or an employee. Next to me is Dr. Juan Guzman, a retired teacher, colleague of mine for many, many years. And next to him is Mrs. Teresa Montoya, a parent. Buenos dias.
Good morning.
As much as one spends the midnight oil in preparing testimony, I have to acknowledge an error in my testimony. In Senate Bill 252, of course, we're talking here about qualification and not quantity, so I just want to acknowledge that error. And I'm sure it's not going to be the first time. You know, the midnight oil just is running out. I'd like to make an observation, first of all, that the previous testimony I can appreciate 100%. Because we have families and we have relatives, neighbors who profit from the ESD's efforts. But I have to make an observation that as much as the testimony provided percentages and so forth, the testimony failed to note that people in corrections, for the most part, are minorities. And for the record, I'd just like to make that observation. Minority students, and especially ELL students, are presently not getting an appropriate education in most of Oregon schools. Recently, national media reported that African American youth are referred more often for special education, and the rate is a lot higher than any other group. Latino students in Oregon are also susceptible to being referred for special education than any other group. What makes them susceptible? The majority of Latino students who are joining our school system from other parts of the country or continent come from families who have had little formal education. They are also entering a school system that are ill-prepared to deal with the culturally and linguistically diverse populations. The staffs, which include supervisory staff, are also not well-versed in dealing with families and learning styles that may not be prevalent within a homogeneous class.
Mr. Serena?
Yes.
I hesitate to interrupt your testimony, but I'd have to caution you that the committee ends at 10 o'clock and that the volume of testimony that you've got in writing, the committee will read the testimony, but if you could summarize and then offer an opportunity for your other witnesses.
Then I will then refer to Mrs. Montoya. Part of our testimony, it's unfortunate, Senator Fraley and Mr. Chair, we will do our best. I'm going to refer to Mrs. Montoya. ¿Le puede explicar a la audiencia lo que ha pasado, señor Guzmán?
Hi. Mi nombre es Teresa Montoya.
My name is Teresa Montoya.
Yo vine del estado de California.
I come from California.
Hace,
I have moved to Oregon about 8 months ago.
Llegué muy entusiasmada aquí al estado de Oregon.
Arrived very enthusiastic in the state of Oregon.
Aquí en Nueva Vida.
To start a new life.
Y apunté a mis niños a la escuela de todos en Canby.
And I took my children to enroll them in Canby.
Mis hijos estaban muy entusiasmados porque iban a ir a una nueva escuela.
My children were very happy to join the school.
Dos semanas de iniciar clases.
And after 2 weeks.
Mi hijo mayor, Carlos Montoya.
My oldest son, Carlos.
Hubo un problema
con
el director.
With the school principal.
Nunca me llamaron a mí para
the school never contacted me
decirme este problema.
To explain what the problem was.
Le llamaron a la manager de los apartamentos donde yo vivo.
They called the manager of the apartment.
Ella tenía mi teléfono, no sé por qué motivo no me llamaron.
I don't know why they never called me.
Cuando yo llegué a la escuela,
when I arrived at school,
a ver qué es lo que estaba pasando.
To find out what had happened.
Mi niño estaba custodiado por policía.
My son was in the custody of police people.
Entonces, cuando llegué, el principal me dio una conversación.
When I arrived, the principal tried to explain,
lo que había pasado.
But not very convincing.
Tomé y hablé con el director, hablé con mi hijo y tomé las dos
sesiones
que me habían dicho.
My children to see what the correct version was of what had occurred.
Desgraciadamente, a mi hijo, a las dos semanas de estar en la escuela, lo expulsaron.
And unfortunately, after 2 weeks of being in school, my son was expelled from school.
A mí me dieron una carta en inglés diciendo que mi hijo no podía estar en la escuela.
They gave me a letter in English telling me my children could not be in school, and they had to be in special education, special school.
En la carta que estaba en inglés que me dieron a mí, decía cosa diferente a lo que estaba en español. Cuando yo volví a ir, que tenía una junta para
school,
ver los
problemas,
el problema,
llevé
al señor Salinas.
I took Mr. Salinas.
Y cuando miraban al señor Salinas, que era un representante
mío, when they saw that Mr. Salinas was my representative,
qué persona era, lo reiniciaron a la escuela.
They immediately
lo invitaron a estar otra vez
back into the school system.
Pero la junta esta no era para regresar a mi hijo.
But the meeting was not to get my son back in school.
Expulsarlo definitivamente de la escuela.
But to expel him.
Y no nada más a él querían expulsar.
And
only también a toda la
familia
de aquí de Kennedy. Cuando fue el señor Salinas, me ayudó bastante.
When Mr. Salinas went to school, he helped me a lot.
Le iban a dar corte a mi hijo.
Because we're going to take
him.
Give him a hearing.
Supuestamente lo tienen que esposar
and they had to
para llevarlo a la corte.
In order to take him to
mi hijo apenas tiene 10 años.
My son is only 10 years old.
No, yo no lo podía aceptar.
I could not accept
cuando
that.
Le Me dijeron esto, yo les dije que
when
no
I
iba a estar aquí.
I told them
y yo mejor me iba a otra parte donde a mis hijos los trataran como personas.
Treated as decent human
en el estado de California estuvo 4 años de niño.
My son was in California
nunca
for 4 years.
Un problema.
I never had a problem in school.
Y a mí todo el tiempo me decían los directores
at school,
que era el problema que pasaba con mis hijos.
They always communicate with me what issues were coming up with my children.
Eso le ha afectado supuestamente mucho a mi hijo. Le ha afectado bastante.
My son has been affected tremendously.
Con la familia, con los amigos.
Because of those issues.
Y con el distrito escolar.
He has affected the whole school. And the relationship between the family and the school.
Pues es lo que puedo decir y...
This is all I can share with you.
Gracias por...
And I thank you.
Atender a mi testimonio.
I thank you for listening.
Was it ever adequately explained, Mrs. Montoya, what the problem was at the school? Or why they decided that your child needed a special education program?
¿Was it claro? ¿Was the problem?
Sí.
Yes, it was.
Cuando mi hijo... él tenía dos semanas como anteriormente, les dije,
after 2 weeks in school,
no conocía la escuela.
He was not familiar with the school.
Le dijeron a mi hijo,
they told him,
siéntate, vas a esperarte.
Wait.
Y mi hijo les dijo, no, porque mi bus se va a ir.
And my son said, no, I have
entonces,
to leave because my bus is
le dijo la maestra que se tenía que sentar.
The teacher then told him,
como mi hijo no le miró de frente,
and as my son did not face her,
se molestó más la maestra.
She became
y le llamó al señor director.
And she called the principal.
Y le el señor director cuando se bajó mi hijo al de línea para el bar.
When my,
él lo portaron son, mi hijo para que mi hijo no se subiera al bar.
They kept him from getting on the bus.
Lo talonearon
they went on, they
de su ropa.
From the clothes, they
he had
some bruises on his body.
De aquí de la parte de esta parte de acá. Y supuestamente el niño al forcejear le dio una patada a uno
and
de los
in the process of struggling with the child, he, the child, kicked one of the teachers.
Esa fue la explicación que me dio el director.
That was the explanation given to me by the principal.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Mrs. Montoya is a rare parent who has had the courage to learn what to do. And she was also lucky that there was one person in the community who said, go and look for somebody to help. When I went to the meeting, there were some basic questions that one has to ask, and having been a principal, I know what kinds of questions to ask. Number one, have you contacted the parents? Number two, have you reviewed the file of this child? This is the second week of school. This is in the fall, second week of school. The file was still in California. Have you installed an intervention program, intervention plan, behavior plan? No, we haven't. I know we have limited time, but the reason that we come before you this morning is because you are considering raising the percentage of kids that can be on special education. Mrs. Montoya's son, with no intervention, would have been in an alternative program right now. Guaranteed. Now, today, through the intervention of also some family counseling, mostly by outside resources, Carlos is a stellar student. Carlos was always a stellar student. And I'll go back to other testimonies. I think we have a problem here of infrastructure. The infrastructure of our school system has been neglected for many, many a year. We talk about the landscape. We talk about demographics changing. We talk about the challenges. We talk about our high SAT scores and so forth. But the fact of the matter is that if you were to look at the infrastructure, we are lacking in infrastructure. And if you extrapolate the numbers and take a look at our student population trends, And look where we are with respect to personnel in schools and other agencies. We are so far behind, it's unbelievable. So we respect the challenge that you have before you. We are merely here to increase the awareness of this committee and other committees as you continue to struggle not only with funding, but also with providing leadership across the state. And speaking of leadership, very few of our Latino parents have the necessary reference points to be in site councils, to be in local school advisory committees. In fact, administrators, for the most part, don't persuade parents to come in and take part. We have very few people on school boards, and obviously, as you walk the hallways here in the Capitol, there's very little evidence here of color and Latino folks. So we really do rely on your leadership to make decisions that I think can make a difference for a group that is really underrepresented in the state of Oregon. Thank you so much.
I have another question for Mrs. Montoya and perhaps Mr. Salinas. Is Carlos bilingual? Is it primarily a language problem that led to a confusion with the teacher and the bus and the placement?
Carlos is bilingual. What you have here is really an issue of culture. The child was not looking at the teacher, you know, eyeball to eyeball like you and I are. He was looking away. Well, that was disrespectful as far as this person was concerned. And when you don't know a child and you touch a child and your blood is already boiling, perhaps the child's and the supervisor, that is not the time to touch a child. The relationship has not been established. And consequently, it was not a matter of language. It was a matter of cultural sensitivity from my perspective. And like Mrs. Montoya pointed out, the issue was first shared with the management, with the apartment manager, rather than the parent.
Is there, is that a perceived language barrier between the administration?
Yes, and this is pretty prevalent. Mr. Chairman, yes, members of the committee, this is pretty prevalent. It's not unique to Canby or any other school district. Like I said, the infrastructure is not there. The landscape is changing. The demographics, all Oregon schools are facing some challenges that were predictable. I mean, I wrote a paper 20 years ago, and people thought that I was a little bit goofy. Well, I'll tell you what, I could share that paper with you today, and you will see that the trends were already being established 20 years ago. Let me add also that for the most part, Latino parents are going to be cordial parents, they're going to be agreeable parents, and may I add that the word special education within the Latino community, when you say educación especial, maybe something better, maybe something enhanced, something, Dr. Guzman, you can attest to that because it's the language doesn't really translate in the same manner that it does, you know, for English-speaking families. So I think that we have a long ways to go in terms of really providing personnel that is linguistically and culturally sensitive across the board. And again, I speak from experience. I've been in the state of Oregon for almost 50 years, and I have been privileged enough to be in the school systems for 31 years. Now I'm being an advocate on the outside.
Mr. Salinas, would you say that in the sum total, part of your testimony is that many of the special education referrals are inappropriate?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that is so. Last night at 7:30, a colleague of mine called me from a school district in Clackamas. And he says, Miguel, is it really fair to have 12 referrals for special education out of two classrooms, and those 12 kids happen to be Latino? And I can provide that testimony in writing also if you wish to. I mean, this is not make-believe numbers. These are actual things that are happening. And what is more sad than anything else is that there's a lot of folks out there, teachers and administrators alike, that are doing, I think, the best job they can, but they are restricted by their jobs and their status, and they cannot come forth and share some of their stories. And like I said earlier, we don't have paid lobbyists. We don't have paid staff that can do research, and we don't have the leadership, whether it be school board or other membership, that can come over and help tell our story. And I think that if you look at the profiles, whether it be the State Departments of Education, Correction, Demographics, Economics, whatever, I think that you will see that the picture really tells a story, and we just come here to supplement that story. And I believe that last week when I provided testimony on another issue, I did provide the committee with an elaborate study that was done by the Education Trust, and it's compelling.
Mr. Salinas, Mrs. Montoya, thank you for bringing this testimony. I appreciate having translation services provided. The question I will pose to the folks from the professional associations is part of the exponential growth in referrals for independent education programs related to cross-cultural competencies or lack of competencies? And are they, in fact, a certain percentage of those referrals inappropriate referrals? And I'll ask them to bring testimony to this issue to put that in perspective. This is not an aspect that I was well aware of, and I'm sure the committee was thinking of these more in terms of learning disabilities rather than cross-cultural competencies.
Sure.
Questions for the committee?
Well, I was going to say, perhaps in Senator Starr's committee or this one, whichever, perhaps there's some racial profiling going on in education that I'm not aware of. And I don't know to what extent teachers have in-service training, whether they have cross-cultural community awareness type training or cultural sensitivity training. I know law enforcement gets it ad nauseum, but I think it might be a good idea to explore that with the Department of Education and see whether they are getting that kind of training.
So I think the lack of those kinds of sensitivity and training mechanisms may result in frustration of the teacher. And if there's no other mechanism but a referral for an independent education program, maybe that is the knee-jerk reaction, downstream the program rather than try to deal with it in place.
This is an area
I'm not familiar with.
Yeah, maybe we've spent the last 5 or 6 or 7 odd years now focusing on directing teachers to put together portfolios and writing samples and putting them in filing cabinets and other extraordinary things.
Senator Starr's ears perk up.
Maybe they should be following some of the demographic changes that are occurring in our communities.
Senator George has a comment.
Mr. Salinas or Smontaglia? Right now, is Carlos at a public school, or is he? Oh, he is at a public school, and he's doing fine now.
Mr. Chairman, Senator George, Carlos was back to school after we intervened.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So he's back in the same school.
Yes, and he's getting awards weekly. One of the things that Mrs. Montoya pointed out is, what a change of behavior! Just a week ago, he was suspended pending expulsion. And Mrs. Montoya says, "Why am I getting all these calls about how wonderful my kid is?" That's the truth. Le acabo de explicar a la membresía, señora Montoya, que nomás una semana o dos, entonces estaba hablando a usted por teléfono, felicitándola, ¿verdad? ¿Puede decir algo?
La siguiente semana de que entró después de que lo suspendieron, me llamaron que mi hijo era un excelente alumno, que era...
I was called a few weeks after the hearing and told that my son was an excellent student.
Era lo mejor que ellos habían tenido por
años. It was one of the better ones they've had in a long time.
Incluso le están dando continuamente certificados de buena
conducta. He continues to receive excellent awards and notifications of excellence.
Well, that is an outcome every parent would be proud to have happen. I'm amazed, I guess, at the alternatives. That's a lot of distance between expulsion and excellence. Thank you very much for your testimony. Colleagues, thank you for staying for our hearing.
Thank you so much.
A little
appreciate
while.
It.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Our public hearing on 252 is closed, and we are adjourned until...